Walt Havenstein, welcome to All Things Considered.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here.
You've proposed, as part of your jobs plan, cutting the business profit taxes
yep.
by just over 1%, which you say would put the state in a better standing compared to its neighbors, but would also cost about $90 million over the next two-year budget. You said that revenue growth would at least in part make up for that. Given the shortfalls that we've seen in business tax revenue in this current budget, how confident can we be that revenue will offset those?
Well, you can't always be exact, but I'm very confident it will. But at the same time, as part of my budget proposal, I'll be proposing 2.5% efficiency reductions across the state government. That in and of itself will also contribute to offsetting the business profits tax reduction.
So 2.5% across every aspect of government?
It will negotiate through the departments, but my expectation is that we can achieve a 2.5% reduction when you look at it in total.
Now, at the same time, going forward, the state is looking at some big changes, and I'm thinking of the recent settlement over mental health care. There's been changes to the hospital tax and the operating costs for the women's prison, which is still a few years down the road.
Right.
But there are costs associated with that.
Sure.
Are there ways to build those into the budget?
Well, there are ways to build those into the budget, but the best way to build it into future budget is get the economy moving, and that's what I intend to do. If you focus on that, then you're not always trying to catch up to every little incremental change you're making. So one of the things in my development plan, economic development plan, which I title 8-15-17-25,000 private sector jobs, is making sure as we look at any initiative that's coming to the governor from the legislature or from the administration, is we do a job impact assessment to make sure that we're focusing not just on the budget, which we do now, but also focus on how any action is going to impact our ability to continue to grow the economy.
And with that kind of impact assessment, are there any possible areas where if the assessment came back, there's no job growth in this measure, or there might even be jobs lost in that measure, that you might still say this is worthy going forward?
Sure. I think you take a balanced approach with a general direction of job growth, but you always have to consider the necessities at the time, right? And so if you arbitrarily draw that line in the sand and aren't willing to consider it, I think that's not practical, and frankly, that's not being a leader.
Are there any particular examples of areas?
No, I don't think I have one in mind, but my guess is amongst the 400 legislators or House members and 24 senators, they'll come up with a few.
Conversely, are there any areas that may promise jobs, such as expanded gambling, that you would then oppose?
Yeah, I've opposed casino gambling, expanded gambling in that context. And the reason I've opposed it is that it's a market that's going the wrong way. If you look across the East Coast of the United States, we see casino gambling's going under readily now and becoming a tax burden on their states, whether it's New Jersey, Delaware, or Pennsylvania. And so from a strategic point of view, I've never been in favor of casino gambling as the cornerstone of economic development for our state.
But you say opposing casino gambling, but that could conceivably leave a door open for other kinds of gambling?
Conceivably.
Some of the economic forecasts that have been released lately say that whatever the business climate happens to be in New Hampshire, there are other factors like, say, a lack of skilled workers going forward in the state that would pose a big challenge. As a governor, you might be able to say to businesses, we have a better business climate, our tax rate will end up being lower than, say, Massachusetts. But then Massachusetts could say, we've got MIT or we've got the lifestyle in Boston that may appeal to young workers more so than New Hampshire. How do you then address those kinds of issues outside of control or what the state has to say about the business climate?
Well, you got to do them in parallel, right? But you have to set where your priorities are going to be. My priorities are on the business climate, economic growth, and job creation. But necessarily, we have to have an integrated approach that includes health care, includes energy, includes our education system, right? And how do we make our education system more a conduit to our employers, whether they're private sector employers or public sector employers, making sure that there's alignment there. And so I had to do that, frankly, when I came to Sanders 15 years ago. We weren't getting the kind of engineers we needed out of UNH. And I went with my engineering lead, Mike Heffron, and went over to UNH, met with Mary Hart, president at the time, sat down, figured out what we could do in the curriculum in Durham that would be much more helpful for us at BAE Systems, Sanders at the time, and then BAE Systems. We made some significant investments in the university, and in a relatively short period of time, we started interning more engineers and technical people from UNH and hiring them after their internship. So that model I know works, that model of, and it has to be integrated into the broader picture when it comes to economic development for a state. I think one of the things sometimes that is frustrating to me is we try to tackle one problem at a time rather than having an integrated long-term approach to problem solving and a framework under which to solve those problems. And my approach will be very much an integrated approach.
But as you point out, I mean, the challenges do play a role outside of just the immediate issue of, say, the budget or, say, higher education. For example, the higher education, the university system and the community college system have been saying, the funding cuts that were put in place by several legislatures ago had a big impact on what we were able to offer to students, not only the way of tuition, but in programs. The costs were going up, and they pushed very hard to get some funding restored in exchange for the promise to keep tuition at the current levels.
Yes.
If you're talking about a 2.5% decrease in spending across the board, does that also include those institutions? And if so, what kind of effect is that going to have?
We'll have to see what kind of effect that might have. But I'm going to, before I say exactly which programs and projects, as opposed to general efficiencies that I want to see, I'm going to have to look at those more closely. I have met over the years and recently this summer with President Huddleston and looked at what he's trying to do. And he and I have talked for a long time, the better part of 10 years, on how do we get alignment strategically with the university system and Durham in particular and our long-term needs for the state. One of the things that he and I have always thought was a shortcoming is there's no long-term view of what that ought to look like. And I intend to create that long-term view and then make the appropriate investments, right, consistent with that long-term view. And I think he and the folks, the trustees of the university system, as well as the community college system, would appreciate having that long-term view and commitment.
On healthcare, This has been a bone of contention in some conservative circles to talk about exactly where you stand on the issue of expanding Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. Is that something that you would move to repeal as governor?
I've always been against and strongly against and sometimes outspoken against Obamacare and Medicaid expansion. I was before I was running for office, and I still am. But the fact of the matter is we have a law. We have a law with regard to Medicaid expansion, and we have a law that would sunset in 2.5 years, and that's problematic. And we need to face into that problem now, not wait 2.5 years and have it sunset and not do anything about it. We've had, frankly, we've had a lack of leadership into facing into problems like that. I am going to face into it, work with the legislature that voted in and approved this current bill to find a solution, a long-term solution that we can afford.
What would the provisions of that improvement necessarily be? Because it should be pointed out that among the people who crafted that legislation were the state Senate President Chuck Morse and other Republicans.
Sure. And I've talked to Senator Morse, and I've talked to Senator Bradley, who are the principal architects there, and we know we're going to have to sit down, and that the truncation in January 2017, from my point of view, is unacceptable. So we have to have a way to fix that and solve it for our people. It's frankly unacceptable that we sign a bill that has that kind of draconian action at the end of it in a relatively short period of time. So we got to go fix it.
Fix it, but not repeal it.
I don't think we have an environment where it would be repealed.
On energy, you've said that we can't afford to continue picking winners and losers in the marketplace. Does that mean that an energy project like Northern Pass should then go forward?
Well, I'm not in favor of the current proposal as it pertains to Northern Pass. But I think sometimes we ask the wrong question, are you for or against Northern Pass? And I think the answer is, the real question is, what do we do to make Northern Pass or projects like Northern Pass work? Because clearly we have to bring lower cost base energy, base electricity in this case, into our region, into the grid. That's good for New Hampshire. That's good for our citizens. Anything that can reduce our rates, but do it in a balanced way. And right now I don't think we have a balanced approach to that project. So I'm not in favor of it. But I would work hard to see that we got a balanced approach. By the same token, I want to make sure that the ratepayers aren't paying for what I think is a normal business decision in, when it comes to expanding our gas capacity in the state, natural gas coming in the state, propane coming into the state, other forms of energy that are coming into the state. So I support initiatives that are market-based, have a favorable impact to our overall rate structure, and frankly, at the end of the day, give us greater diversity in energy or fuel.
Another issue that comes up with energy is, of course, fuel for a vehicle. And you've come out in opposition to the gas tax increase, the 4 cents per gallon on that. The Business and Industry Association backed that one-time increase on the grounds that businesses would benefit from improved roads and improved bridges. Do you see a different approach than to finishing something like the expansion of I-93 or the Sarah Mildred Long Bridge that would be funded in a different way?
No. I support infrastructure investments, right? It includes not just the maintenance but long-term investments in our infrastructure, whether the roads and bridges or their wideband communications. But the fact of the matter is this tax, because of the diversion from our highway fund to other things, in my opinion, was unnecessary. That if the diverted funds were used on roads and bridges, we wouldn't need this tax, and that the things that were diverted for were put in the general operating fund, then they would stack up in terms of priorities with regard to other priorities in the state. And that's what concerned me is that we're still not putting all the revenue that we're generating from the highway fund against highway and bridges and infrastructure to include I-93 expansion. And nobody needs to tell me we can't start and stop big government programs. I know we can't, because the inefficiency associated with that is unacceptable. But by the same token, let's make sure the resources that we have allocated for roads and bridges and expansion get spent properly there.
And if all of that money was spent purely on roads and bridges and transportation funding, you're saying that that's adequate?
I believe it is.
Okay.
And again, I've talked with legislators to get a sense of that in coming up with that position.
Finally, and this is a question we ask of every candidate, assuming you win the primary and the general election, what do New Hampshire residents point to in 2 years to say this is where Walt Havenstein had a big impact as governor?
Yeah. What I hope they will see and what I expect them to see is a renewed business climate, a state government focused on being the advocate for business growth and job creation. A governor who's out selling the state of New Hampshire. We've recreated New Hampshire Advantage, restated New Hampshire Advantage economically, and jobs are on the rise at double the rate they are going at today. And that those jobs are high-paying, sustainable jobs, much like the environment I saw in New Hampshire when I got here 15 years ago.
Walt Havenstein, thanks so much for your time.
You're welcome.